but I am not a Colonel General. The day before yesterday, my headquarters received a signal saying that I had been promoted to General Field Marshal. It is also written in my military identity papers. He touched the breast pocket of his tunic. It was not possible, however, to change my uniform in the circumstances. Voronov and Rokossovsky exchanged glances of ironical amusement. General Shumilov had already informed Don Front headquarters of Paulus's last-minute promotion. "So, Herr General Field Marshal," Voronov resumed, "we are asking you to sign an order addressed to the part of your army which still resists, telling them to surrender to prevent the useless loss of life." "It would be unworthy of a soldier," Paulus burst out before Jetlenko had finished his translation. "Is it possible to say," asked Voronov, "that to save the lives of your subordinates is behaviour unworthy of a soldier when the commander himself has surrendered?" "I didn't surrender. I was taken by surprise." This naive reply did not impress the Russian officers, who were well aware of the circumstances of the surrender. "We are talking of a humanitarian act," Voronov continued. "It will take us only a couple of days, or even just a few hours, to destroy the rest of your troops who continue to fight on. Resistance is useless. It will only cause the unnecessary deaths of thousands of soldiers. Your duty, as an army commander, is to save their lives. And this is even more the case, because you yourself saved your life by surrendering." Paulus, who'd been playing nervously with the packet of cigarettes and ashtray laid on the table for his use, shirked the question by sticking to formulae. "Even if I did sign such an order, they won't obey. If I have surrendered, I automatically cease to be their commander." "But a few hours ago you were their commander." "Since my troops were split into two groups," Paulus persisted, "I was commander of the other pocket only in theory. Orders came separately from Führer headquarters, and each group was commanded by a different general." The argument went round and round in circles. Paulus's nervous tic was even more pronounced, and Voronov, too, knowing that Stalin was waiting in the Kremlin to hear the result, began to show the strain. His upper lip twitched, the legacy of a car crash in Belorussia. Paulus, in his blocking tactics, even claimed that if he did sign the paper, it would be regarded as a forgery. Voronov replied that in that case, they would have one of his own generals brought over to witness the signature, and he would be sent into the North Kessel with the paper to guarantee its authenticity. But Paulus, however lame his arguments sounded, stuck to his refusal to sign. Voronov finally had to accept that any further attempt to persuade him was useless. "I must inform you, Herr General Field Marshal," Jatlenko translated, "that by your refusal to save the lives of your subordinates, you are taking on a heavy responsibility for the German people and the future of Germany." Paulus stared at the wall, depressed and silent. In this tormented pose, only the tick in his face indicated his thoughts. Voronov then brought the interview to a close by asking Paulus if his lodging was satisfactory and whether he needed a special diet because of his illness. "The only thing I would like to request," Paulus replied, "is to feed the many prisoners of war and to give them medical attention." Voronov explained that the situation at the front made it difficult to receive and cope with such a mass of prisoners, but that they would do all they could. Paulus thanked him, stood up, and gave another half bow. Hitler heard the news at the heavily guarded Wolfschanze deep in the East Prussian forest, a place once described by General Jodl as a cross between a monastery and a concentration camp. He did not bang the table this time. He stared silently into his soup. His voice and anger returned the next day. Field Marshal Keitel and Generals Jeschunek, Jodl and Zeitzler were all summoned to the Führer's midday conference.